Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
Today we're going to be in Genesis 31. This is where Jacob decides to leave his father-in-law Laban and go home. And it's a traumatic event, I want to tell you. It's been 20 years now since Rebekah sent him. 14 years he had to work for his wives. 6 years he's worked for his cattle. But things are deteriorating rapidly. The first few verses of Genesis 31, we find three different, reasons why it's time for Jacob to go home. Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's son saying. Now, you know, I don't know how old these boys are. They're old enough to take care of the flocks. Apparently they're repeating what they heard at home. And here's what apparently is being said. Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what belonged to our father, he has made all his wealth. Now, if you have King James, it says glory. The word for glory, kabod, comes from the word for weight or heaviness. And it's so used in the sense of honor or here for wealth. And most of the modern translations calls it wealth. Now, this is not a true statement. Because if you look back in Genesis 30:30, you'll see that when Jacob got there, Laban didn't have that many possessions. The presence of Jacob has called Laban to become rich. But the sons don't see it that way. They see it as exploitation. Now, not only did the sons have this problem, but in verse 2, we see the attitude of Laban himself has changed. Notice what it says. And Jacob saw the attitude of Laban, and behold, it was not friendly toward him as formerly. Even though the man is manipulative, in my notes I've entitled this chapter, The Trickster Meets His Match, because I want to tell you, Laban's the same kind of manipulator that Jacob has been. Now, before he was friendly and smiled, although he was ripping Jacob off, but now even the smile's gone. He's outworn his welcome. It's time to go home. In the midst of this, in verse 3, the Lord's going to appear to him in a dream and tell him, time to come home. Isn't it funny, now that God called Abraham out of this area, God sends Jacob back. But as we looked at the last few lessons, it's kind of been a training time for Jacob. He was kind of a mama's boy. Now, we don't know if he was a kind of a milquetoast fella, because he was a herdsman, and he's going to wrestle with an angel all night. He took care of these sheep. He's going to describe how vigorous the physical necessity was for shepherding. So I don't think we can say he's a wimp of a fella, but he was kind of tied to mother's coattail, and this kind of grew him up, I want to tell you, in a real strong way. Now, in verse 4, we begin this account where Jacob sends for his two wives. Notice it says, out in the field. Why? Well, he wants them away from the house, away from service. He wants to talk to them privately about some matters that apparently he never discussed before with them. Notice that Rachel is for Leah. Now, Leah's older, but Rachel is the one that Jacob loved. She apparently is the pretty one. And Leah is the one who, boy, she's the one that bore all the children, I'll tell you what. Now, by the way, Judah is going to come from her. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, they're all from Leah. Now, notice where it mentions in verse 5. Now, verses 5 through 13, Jacob's going to present his case to his wives. In verses 14 and 16, they're going to respond to him. And he said to them, see your father's attitude, that it is not friendly towards me as formerly, but the God of my father. Well, that's a neat phrase. It's going to be used several times in this chapter. What we have here is an historical continuity of the faithfulness of God. And that's the idea here. The God of my father has been with me. And, of course, this been with me is going to be emphasized as back up in verse 3 where it says, I will be with you, God says to him. That comes from the Bethel experience, house of God experience, when Jacob was on his way to find a wife from his relatives. That's back in chapter 28. And the direct allusion is chapter 28, verse 15. Although the whole account is mentioned that in verse 13, where the God of Bethel is mentioned by the angel of the Lord, and they identify themselves as the same one. Okay. Now, notice what it says in verse 6, and you know that I have served your father with all my strength. Now, this word strength is the word for, it's a rare root in Hebrew for pant. Now, what Jacob is saying, he did work hard. He wasn't trying to trick his father-in-law or anything. He really worked hard, and his wives know just how hard he worked, how he was gone out in the field many times day and night. Because sometimes they were fighting over who he would sleep with when they got home, if you read the earlier parts of Genesis. So he was gone a lot, and they knew that. And yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. Now this word of cheat probably goes back to Genesis 29:25 cheated him about his wife, and they knew well he'd gotten drunk, and shows one of the problems of drinking on your wedding night. Woke up with the wrong woman, if you can believe that. Now, the root here of the word is to rob, or to cause to fall. Laban had manipulated Jacob for those 14 years' service, and changed my wages 10 times. Now, this same thing is mentioned in chapter 31, verse 41. It's not mentioned early in the Bible, or not told specifically, but you can pick up from the general context what's happening. Laban made a deal with Jacob, these last 6 years of service, about the cattle. Jacob would receive the off-colored cattle, so it'd be easy to know Laban's from Jacob's. But as God blessed these off-colored goats and sheep and camels, Jacob changed the deal. He said, now, first of all, Jacob got all the off-color ones. But then Laban apparently said, no, I want the speckled ones, and I want the striped ones, and I want the mottled ones. And so he had changed this relationship over and over. Every time he changed it, God caused those particular goats who had that particular marking to be the ones that bred with the female goats and sheep and cattle. And that's the kind of offspring that came. God was involved in this. Laban should have seen that. Jacob certainly did and knew it. Now, notice where it says then, 10 times. I think a round number, maybe 10, but could be a round number for more than that. Let's see. God did not allow him to hurt me. Jacob knew what was happening. Not only had God appeared to him, just apparently telling him about that he was with him, there was the Bethel experience, and not only the Bethel, but this recent revelation we saw in verse 3. And not only that, but Rebekah had told him about what God said earlier to her back in 25:23, that he was going to have the patriarchal blessing. The birthright would be his. So he knew God was involved in this. And what he's saying is, if it wasn't for God, your father would have ripped me off bad. And so God's the one who's protected me. Now, notice then where it says, if he spoke thus, the speckle shall be your wages, and then the flock brought forth speckled. And if he spoke thus, the stripe shall be your wages, then all the flock brought forth striped. Thus God has taken away, the word here is delivered, isn't that interesting? Delivered your father's livestock and given them to me. Now you say, what was because he put this almond rod down and all? Well, that was the way God apparently showed him to do it, but it wasn't in the almond rod, this speckledy and mottly thing. It was in the power of God. That's where it was. Now, verse 10, and it came about at that time when the flocks were mating. God calls only certain kind of males to mate, and it was the kind that belonged, that would have the offspring that belonged to Jacob. Then I lifted up my eyes, and I saw in a dream, and behold, the male goats, of which were mating, were striped, speckled, and mottled. And the angel of the Lord, now we've talked about that several times. It's obviously a reference to personification of God. You see in your notes all the different places where it's mentioned. Here is a good example where it says, the angel of the Lord in verse 11, but look at verse 13 where he says, I am the God of Bethel. The angel of the Lord is saying, I'm the God of Bethel. It's obviously God. It's just like Exodus chapter 3 where it says, the angel of the Lord came in the burning bush, and then it says, God spoke out of the bush. And I've given you all those references in your notes. Now, in a dream at Jacob, and he said, here am I. He said, lift up now your eyes and see that all the male goats which are mating are striped, speckled, and mottled. And I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. Boy, God was conscious of what was happening to Jacob. This almost reminds me again of Exodus chapter 3, verse 7, where God says, I've seen the affliction that Pharaoh and his taskmasters have given to you. Friends, I want you to know it's so comforting to me to know in the darkest days of our lives that God knows what we're going through too. God cares about us. God showed His unique love to Hagar. God showed His unique love to Abraham. God showed His unique love to Sarah, to Rebekah, to Jacob, and on, and friends, the covenant God will show it to us because we're part of the covenant too through Jesus Christ. Hallelujah. Take courage, friend. Nothing just happens in your life. Notice where it mentions here then, I am the God of Bethel. Now go back and read chapter 28, verses 10 through 22 to get the complete perspective of all that happened. This is where the ladder from heaven, the angels ascending and descending came. That's interesting. A lot of songs built on that. Or where you anointed a pillar. I remember for years I used to sing, here I raise my Ebenezer. I wonder what in the world was an Ebenezer. Well, an Ebenezer is an uplifted stone. It comes in this account in Genesis 8. So it's a pillar to anoint. Now later on that pillar is going to be outlawed as a cultic object. But Jacob didn't know that. And so it was a sign of a covenant between him and God. He'll raise the same kind of pillar later in this chapter as a sign of a covenant between him and Laban. Now, where you made a vow to me, now arise, leave this land, and return to the land of your birth, i.e., Canaan, Palestine. And Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, Do we still have a portion or inheritance with our father's house? Question mark. Are we not reckoned to him as strangers, foreigners? For he has sold us and also entirely consumed our purchase price. Now, there are some real facts here that the Nuzi tablets, an archaeological find, talking about the Hurrian culture. Now, the Hurrian culture is around the time, maybe a little bit later in the patriarchal period, but we learn a lot of the customs from this. The Code of Hammurabi has been helpful for some of the customs of this second millennium B.C., but particularly these Nuzi tablets describing the Hurrian culture. We learn from that even foreign wives, concubines, had certain rights. But both Leah and Rachel felt like their father had violated their legal rights. He had sold them by taking years of labor from Jacob, and he never gave part of their mohar, M-O-H-A-R, what it's called, never saved that for them to give to them as their inheritance, which the Nuzi tablet seemed to imply was the cultural norm. They felt violated, they felt sold, they felt cheated, they felt unloved by their father, even against the background of the culture of their own day. Now, surely all the wealth that God has taken away from our father belongs to us and to our children. Now then, do whatever God has said to you. What these girls are saying is, all you have belongs to us rightfully anyway, and our father tricked us out of it, same way he's been tricking you. And so you do what God told you, the Elohim told you. Now, then Jacob arose. Now, verses 17 and 19 is going to be Jacob's flight. Now, people, commentators say, well, should Jacob have done this or should he confronted Laban? I don't think we know that. I think Jacob was afraid of Laban, just like Jacob was afraid of Esau. Jacob's a pretty scared fella until he wrestles that angel and gets a little backbone in him. Even God's encouragement, I'm with you and I'll help you, didn't help Jacob overcome his fear. Now, he's afraid of Laban. And Jacob arose and put his children and his wives upon camels. His kids wouldn't have been too old, maybe oldest 13, youngest 6, something like that, around those ages, too young to walk that far. So he put his wives and his children on these camels, and look at next verse 18, and he drove away all his livestock and all his property. The word drove away is from another Hebrew root, different from the one back in verse 6, a little more common root, that means to pant. Implication, he hustled out of there. He was moving his herds rapidly. Now, some of his herds would die. Some of the young couldn't keep up. But he was a very rapid pace that he left with. All right? Gathered all his property, lived in tents, wasn't too hard to move. Acquired his livestock, which he had gathered in Padan Aram, and to go to the land of Canaan to his father Isaac. He's going back to Isaac. And then Laban had gone to shear his flock. Now, this shearing time was very important for shepherds, and they used it as a festival time. It was kind of a party time. Families got together. A lot of dancing and singing and eating. Now, you see this from several passages implied, I agree. Genesis 38:12 about Judah. 1 Samuel 25:4, really all of 1 Samuel 25 about David and Nabok. And then 2 Samuel 13:23. You can look at those references. So he was over there with his own flocks. We know from Genesis 30:36, it was 3 days' journey between the two flocks. Then Rachel stole the household idols. Now these are called teraphim. We understand from the Hurrian documents, again, the Nuzi tablets, that these household idols were a sign of the inheritance rights, and they were given to the child who inherited. I think Rachel stole it because of what she said earlier. My daddy hadn't given me rightful inheritance. All you had belongs to us anyway. And stood in the household gods was a way of her showing that. Now, I don't think she was into worshiping them, because a little bit later she's going to sit on them and claim to have her menstrual period. Now, that's not showing too much respect for these deities. So I think it was something else. Now, some of the people have said, like Eben Ezra, a Jewish commentator, says, she took them so her father could not use them for divination and thereby know which way Jacob had went. That's possible. Rashi, another Jewish commentator, says, Rachel stole them in hope that her father would quit being an idolater. But I think the Nuzi tablets are better. I think Rachel's really ticked off at her dad and not trying to help him get out of idolatry. She's trying to keep him from finding them and tracking them down. But, of course, Laban knew which way Jacob went. You can't cover the tracks of thousands of animals that easy. So Rachel stole these teraphim. Now, these teraphim are interesting. In 1 Samuel 19:13, one is a life-size, has to do with the life of David, life-size statue. But usually they're smaller idols, one that could fit in a camel sack and that Rachel could sit on. Now, we learn quite a bit from these. These are used for divination, we learn, from Zechariah 10:2. We also know they're unusually often identified with the ephod, another means of divination. We find from Judges 17:5, Judges 18:14 and 17, and Hosea 3:4. We can see they're condemned because of idolatry in 1 Samuel 15:23. You ought to look those words up in your Bible dictionary. It's very interesting, the teraphim. Now, Jacob deceived Laban, the Syrian. Now, this is difficult, called the Syrian. He's called that in verse 24. Matter of fact, Jacob is called an Arminian, and that's another possible translation than Syrian, in Deuteronomy 25:5. We don't understand all of the different lineages. The best we have is Genesis chapter 10. But there seems to be a connection between the line the Hebrews came from and the line the Arminians came from, and there's some uncertainty of how they're related. So he fled with all that he had, and he arose and crossed the Euphrates River, that's implied by the river, and he set his face toward the hill country of Gilead, the rocky hill country. Now, verse 22, when it was told Laban on the third day, the flocks were 3 days apart. So some of the servants apparently went and told Laban, took them 3 days to get to Laban. We learn that from Genesis 30, 36. He took his kinsmen, his relatives with him, and pursued him a distance of 7 days. Jacob had a 3 day head start, 7 days more, 10 days. Now, the distance is about 250 to 350, depending on where the flocks were in relation to Syria or Paddan Aram, and what part of the hill country of Gilead we're talking about. So it's not impossible to get that far, but it is a pretty long way. So he caught up with them in the hill country of Gilead. And God came to Laban, the Syrian, in a dream. Ooh, it's much like God came to Abimelech in Abraham's life in Genesis 20, 3 and following. Came to him in a dream at night and said, "Be careful that you do not speak to Jacob either good or bad." Now, this is kind of a Hebrew idiom for leave the fellow alone. Laban doesn't quite do it, but he doesn't say much, I want to tell you. And Laban caught up with Jacob. Now, Jacob had pitched his tent. This is the first time it mentions Jacob pitched his tent. Probably Jacob, being in Gilead, thought he was home free. He was safe. So he finally put his tent up and all his wives' tent, apparently all his relatives' tents. And so he put up these tents. And Laban and his kinsmen camped in the hill country of Gilead, very close to Jacob's camp. And Laban said to Jacob, "What have you done by deceiving me and carrying away my daughters like captives of the sword?" Now, I want to tell you, verse 25 down through 26, I would entitle Laban's tirade. And really, it's not appropriate. Now, maybe he really felt this. Maybe maybe it's an expression of genuine concern. But I think it's Laban the trickster again, trying to put Jacob in bad light, when really it was Laban who is the trickster par excellence in these accounts here, not Jacob. Jacob learns what it is to get at the other end of the stick about being tricked. He knows how Esau feels now after being with Laban, I want to guarantee you. So he accuses him of running off with his daughters like captives. Truth is, his daughters wanted to go. Apparently, Daddy hadn't paid any attention to them, treated them roughly, and they were ready to go. "And why did you flee secretly and deceive me, steal my heart away, and did not tell me that I might send you away with joy and with song and with timbre and lyre?" He was saying, "I would have given you a party." This was a festival time in this party. Oh, Jacob knew that was a bunch of baloney, just a bunch of baloney. "And did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters." He wasn't too concerned with kissing them because the daughters felt neglected. "Now you have acted foolishly." Now this word "acted foolishly" is used in two other contexts. One with Saul and one of David. In both of those, it implies guilt and sin. And so I think Laban's accusing Jacob of being sinful and guilty here. You might want to see the account of Saul in 1 Samuel 13:13 and in David 2 Samuel 24:10, where they're called foolish. Now, verse 29 is interesting. "It is in my power to do you harm, but the God of your father spoke to me last night." Now, the word "in my power," some translations say it is in the power of the hand of my God. But the reason here, the word "El" is used. Now, there's a play between the word "El" and the word "Elohim," usually translated God, capital G. Now, this shows us that the etymology of the term Elohim might be "to be strong," because the word here, "in my power," is another meaning of the word "El." So Elohim means the stronger, kind of similar to El Shaddai, God Almighty, although some folks think the derivation of that is different. I was up at finishing my doctor's degree this summer at Trinity Evangelical in Chicago, and my Old Testament professor said that El Shaddai meant many-breasted, kind of like the God of Ephesus in the New Testament, Artemis. I'm not sure of that etymology, and I haven't been able to find that, but he was convinced of that. I think El Shaddai usually is translated to be strong, or God Almighty. So here, El and Elohim connected with the root to be strong. Now, he mentions that God spoke to him, and exactly what God said to him. Now, and now I have indeed gone away because you longed greatly for your father's house. Laban's saying the only reason you left, not because I've been cruel to you or unfair to you, just you got real homesick. Now, the word longed for is a root we get in the Hebrew pale. It's used for silver being a pale metal. It's a strong term. Jacob had terrible homesickness for Canaan. And that's true, but that's not the whole story. But why did you steal my household gods? Back to 31:19. Rachel did it. But I want to tell you, Jacob didn't know that because he's going to endanger Rachel's life by saying, whoever took them, let them die. So he didn't know. He wasn't duplicitous in this along with his favorite wife. But Laban brings this up. That really implies he went and tried to consult these gods, because see, he was in a real hurry to get Jacob, but he went home and apparently tried to divine where Jacob was with these gods. Maybe that's really why Rachel took him. I don't know, but Eben Ezra does. Then Jacob answered and said to Laban, because I was afraid, he said, lest you would take your daughters from me by force. Now this is very important, because later on Laban's going to say, you've got to promise to be good to my daughters. Why, Jacob's the one who thinks of his daughters more than he does. His daughters feel neglected by him and cheated by him. So this shows, really, that Laban is trying to make a case in front of the other kinsmen, his and Jacob's, to put Jacob in bad light. So I think Laban the trickster's at work here, not Jacob is the problem. Now, I see. Okay. Notice in verse 32. The one whom you find your God shall not live. Now this is right in line with the code of Hammurabi, which said if a man stole another man's gods, he should die. For this shows the historicity of Genesis. The more archaeology uncovers the ancient Near East, the more we see the accuracy, and in my opinion, implied strong, the supernaturalness and inspiration of the Bible. Among thy belongings, take it for yourself. For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. You know, the rabbis say Rachel's going to die in Genesis 35:16-18 in childbirth with Benjamin. The rabbis say that she died because of this curse put on her by Jacob. That's a bit much. I'm not sure we can do that. Anyway, it was hidden in this camel saddle, look, verse 34. And the word here in verse 34, felt through the tent, this comes from a root that means to feel with your hands. It's used twice in the Bible of a blind person groping. Deuteronomy 28:29, Job 5:14, Job 12:5. So Jacob let Laban feel through all of his private things. Notice separate tents. Again, the historicity. Now, she put him on this camel saddle she was sitting on, and Rachel claimed to be in her menstrual period. Now, we learn from Leviticus 15:19 later on, the Mosaic Covenant, this made one ceremonially unclean. Now, how far back we can project that, and what kind of cultural taboos might be on a woman in her menstrual period, we can only assume and can't really. Anyway, she tricked her dad, and dad didn't want to search underneath her and make her get up. And verse 36, down through 42, Jacob's had all he can stand. He just blows up on 20 years of frustration. And he just tells Laban what he really thinks of him. He describes how he's been worked like a dog as a shepherd. How he's bent over backwards and taking care of these sheep. He was there when they gave birth. He was there when wild animals attacked him. He never took what was his right to eat a ram every now and then. Couldn't eat a female sheep or goat, but could eat a ram every now and then. Was allowed to shepherd. Jacob never took that. Any wild animal killed one, Jacob gave his own. Now this goes back again to the Newsy tablets that show that if you could, a shepherd could show the body of a sheep that was killed by an animal, he wasn't responsible for it because it shows he was watching the sheep and he delivered that carcass from the wild animal. So it really shows the historicity again. You might want to see the Code of Hammurabi, paragraph 266. So Jacob just continues this. Now verse 42 says, if the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac, that's unusual, mentioned twice only here in this chapter. Some say it goes back to Abraham about to kill Isaac in Genesis 22. Well, that would put the fear of God in you, I guarantee you. But I think it may be back in the patriarchal promises that we saw, back where Isaac tried to bless Esau and God stopped him. That may be possible. Now, Albright, a very famous archaeologist from America, says that it's related to the word kinsman, the kinsman of Isaac, and he gets that from the cognate languages. Now, I'm not sure which is true of that. But he says, you'd have sent me away. Laban's greed is the problem. He'd have taken everything from Jacob. But God had delivered me. And so he rendered judgment last night. What's that referred to? Laban's dream, verse 24 and 29. God said, leave him alone. Boy, Laban did it. Now, he kind of bad-mouthed him, but he left him alone. Now, Laban says, well, boy, what are we going to do? My daughters are here. My children are here. My flocks, all that you see is mine. But what can I do this day for my daughters or their children whom they have borne? And Jacob says, let's make a contract. Jacob makes the offer. Or Laban makes the offer, but Jacob puts up the pillar, the Ebenezer, gets all the men to make thing, build a kind of a pile of stones, rather eat a covenant deal on that. Notice then in verse 47, they call it two different names, one Aramaic, one Hebrew. There's a real problem here about linguistics. Does that mean that the patriarchs originally spoke Aramaic, but once they got into Canaan, they took on the dialect, which is very similar to Aramaic, of the Canaan and began to speak Hebrew? That seems to be the implication, but it pushes that back earlier than history than we'd ever suppose from linguistic studies. Word mizpah, which is Hebrew for watchtower. And if you read through this, you'll see that Laban is really accusing Jacob of a lot of things in this contract, saying, now you got to do this, and you got to do this, and this pillar is a witness between us, and God be on my side, because, so you won't do this and this. Jacob just let him go. It was an act for the kinsman, I think, not because of Jacob's character. Now, Jacob's character is not squeaky clean, but Laban's the one, I think, making brownie points here with his covenant. Let's see. Notice verse 53, the God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge, plural. Now, this is, I think Laban's bringing in several other gods here, not just Yahweh, but the God of Nahor, who apparently was a polytheist. And I don't know about all that, but Jacob only swears by the fear of his father Isaac or the God of his father, okay? Only one. And then you can read the rest of this. It's a very interesting account. Rather long account of how Jacob finally gets away. We're going to talk about the river Jacob and it wrestling with the angel next. Jacob was apparently a very hard-working man, and he had met his match with Laban, I want to tell you, who was as big a manipulator as he once was with his brother Esau. I think he's going to learn his lesson by dealing with Laban and by wrestling with the angel and by the revelation of God. Jacob's going to become Israel, and his kids are going to become the basis for God's covenant people that were chosen to be a kingdom of priests, so God might choose all men whom He loves desperately. I've enjoyed being with you, and I'll see you again, same time, same place, next week. May the Lord bless you.